How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, and we've got a lot of it to talk about today. In fact, shortly before we went on the air today, we got some of the ratings from the Strikeforce in Nashville show last night on CBS, and the numbers were a disaster. And we talked about last week the importance of the numbers and this show doing well on CBS and what might happen if it did not. And looks like Jake Shields in the main event against Dan Henderson was not a fight the people wanted to see. We'll break down all the numbers here, talk about what likely means for CBS, and why, on top of that, the brawl, the gigantic brawl at the end of the show, probably in this situation was not the best thing for Strikeforce. So, a lot of MMA to talk about today, as well as pro wrestling. Tonight is the TNA Lockdown pay-per-view. In years past, Lockdown has done very well, actually. The biggest buy rates that TNA has ever done have been for the Lockdown pay-per-view. Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle in their cage match a couple years back did 60,000 buys. This show this year, despite a lethal Lockdown war game style match with Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair as team captains, not looking to do anything close to that. In fact, if it comes close to doing 60,000 buys, it'll pretty much be a miracle. I see this pay-per-view being the pro wrestling version, in fact, of Strikeforce CBS last night, and probably doing in the $20,000 to $25,000 buy range that a lot of their recent pay-per-views have done. And actually, we don't even know that, since I would guess a lot of the recent pay-per-views haven't even done that well. So we'll talk about the TNA show tonight. We'll run down all of the matches in detail. There's some bonus matches added to that show over the weekend. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about WWE being stranded overseas. The volcano has disrupted air travel, and WWE just happened to be in Europe, and that has caused some massive turmoil, including the Raw crew being grounded and unable to come back home. So we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the shows for tomorrow. There's a lot of stuff coming up, including a WWE pay-per-view next weekend. Talk about some UFC as well. Dana White, his reaction to last night's Strikeforce, and a whole lot more. We'll be taking your phone calls and emails as well, as we do every single week. Joined after the next break by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. So, a lot of stuff to talk about today. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the next 2 hours here on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Got a ton of it to talk about today. And Mike, how you doing?
Not doing too bad. Doing a little bit better than Mauro Ranallo is right now, because I believe he's still pretty upset.
Mauro Ranallo was extremely upset last night about what happened after the Strikeforce show ended. For those who didn't see the show, very quickly, the main event was Dan Henderson taking on Jake Shields in a fight that I think almost everybody in the world was expecting Dan Henderson to win, probably including Jake Shields, based on his pre-fight interview and the pre-fight weigh-in photos. Dan, however, went in there, had an awesome first round, nearly won the fight, then got all blown up. And it went 5 rounds. Jake Shields dominated the rest of the fight. Henderson was on his back. He was being taken down repeatedly by Jake Shields. And, of course, in the end, he ended up losing the unanimous decision. And afterwards, as Jake was in the ring doing his promo afterwards, Jason Mayhem Miller walked up. And Mayhem basically said, "So when am I getting my rematch, Jake?" And Gilbert Melendez, who was in Jake's corner, was offended that this man had jumped in there, and he shoved Mayhem Miller. Mayhem Miller kind of got back into Jake's face. Jake shoved him, and then it became a gigantic pull-apart brawl. And I don't mean like a pro wrestling style brawl or even your usual MMA style brawl where dudes jump in there and pull each other apart. I mean, you had the Diaz brothers and Shields and Melendez. You had guys trying to kill each other in this brawl. And yes, as noted, when it was over, Mauro Ranallo was appalled at what he had just seen. And normally, this would have been great. It would have built up a fight for perhaps the next show. It would have got people interested in seeing the Jake Shields versus Jason Mayhem Miller fight. But unfortunately, this insane brawl came on a show that went 45 minutes longer than it was supposed to, on a show that did a terrible rating. And we don't know, but most likely this is the end of CBS on Strikeforce.
Well, most of all, Moro did it all of the wrong way, because he, instead of jumping on, you know, he jumps on Miller, but he doesn't jump on the diabolical brothers who, you know, Melendez was the one who shoved, because you're saying they're all killing each other. Melendez was the one that shoved Mayhem Miller. And then the entire Cesar Gracie Jiu-Jitsu camp was the ones jumping on Mayhem Miller. So, you know, Brent, I mean, obviously, they do this all the time in all sports to build up events. So I don't, you know, see, unless they specifically told Miller not to get in the ring, what exactly he did wrong there, as they showed the Diaz brothers and everyone else putting boots to him. It wasn't everyone trying to beat up everyone else. It was everyone jumping on Mayhem Miller. That was the guy that had the shows where people got revenge on bullies. Why should he be the bad guy in all of this? Have the guy that everybody booed for winning the fight be the bad guy in all of this, which that was the other incredible thing, too, in the fact that the crowd was completely sapped out of this, because they just did not want to see Jake Shields beat Dan Henderson. And from the first round on, it was all Shields.
Yeah, it was interesting in the sense that Mayhem Miller did, in fact, just get in there. He even had a smile on his face when he asked for his rematch. And, you know, they said, well, you know, what are, you know, when am I getting my match? And that's when Melendez's note attacked him, and we had the giant brawl. And you know, they were really mad at Mayhem. But if you actually just watched what Mayhem did, he did nothing any different than anything that anyone else has done in these fights before. But it was just a... you know, it was a disaster. It was bad times. And on top of that, the rating last night, we should talk about. Going in, I think a lot of people knew it wasn't going to do a blowaway number. I had predicted personally 1.4 to 1.6. That was my prediction. And it looks like even I, and that was a low, I was given a low number. We did the Observer radio show with Dave Meltzer, and he was predicting around a 2 or a 2.2, and he thought it was absolutely crazy to have predicted a 1.4. And in the end, he was right in a different way. I was crazy to have thought they would have done so well. We don't actually have the number, the rating for the entire show, but we do have the 18 to 49 adult number, which... They are looking at the demos. They pretty much said, we're not going to look at the rating. We're just going to look at the demos. If it does really, really good in the prime demos and everything is okay. Well, not looking good. The show did a 0.9 and a 3 share, fourth of all the networks. Fox did a 1.4. ABC did a 1.1. NBC did a 1. And CBS did a 0.9. As far as total viewers, CBS did 2.95 million, NBC did 4.46 million, ABC 3.8, and Fox 5.06 million. And the show in the adult 18 to 49 demo opened at a 0.8, grew to a 1, then a 1.2, and then another 1 for the 10:30 to 11 hour. We don't know what the final 45 minutes did. May have done very well, but unfortunately, a lot of people in that time slot were tuning in, waiting for the local news, which they didn't get. And that was one of the big things going in. And we talked about this. CBS wanted this show to go 2 hours. There have been a lot of complaints in the past about these CBS shows going long. And as a result, the local newscasts get bumped 45 minutes, and they get very upset about that. And CBS said, we want this show 2 hours long. Want it to end right at 11 o'clock, and Strikeforce? I don't know. I said this going in. Why would you schedule 3 title fights on a show that needs to end in 2 hours? You know going in that all 3, if they go 5 rounds, you're not going to get it in on time. And sure enough, all 3 fights went 5 rounds. The show went 45 minutes past the top of the hour. And it was the worst possible day to not stick to the schedule that CBS had given them.
Into the one introduction that you cut down out of all of them is King Moe's.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and I just, bad night in a lot of ways for them, and it just shows you how badly Fedor and Overeem have screwed that promotion, because they did the exact thing Elite XC did in their second time on TBS, which was put on three. And as a fan, I was happy to see those fights. But realistically, you know, where was the possibility of the one huge knockout, that one big thing? Yes, Dan Henderson, but, I mean, realistically, throughout his career, I mean, yes, he's had a couple of knockouts, but still, where's that spectacular knockout possibility you could get out of Fedor or you could get out of Overeem? And neither one of those guys, both of those guys should have been on this show. Bobby Lashley should have been on this show. Somebody else should have been on this show to give this some more value, because the way it looks right now, I mean, with 2.63 million viewers for the time so far, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what they did last time. I got to pull those numbers up right in front of me, but that's such a huge drop-off. They started with an 0.8. Right there is that's a horrible sign where it's Strikeforce, looking at those numbers, because Kelly Kyle, the senior executive vice president of CBS Primetime, said after the fight that they're going to do the same thing they do after every show, which is, quote, review it, and we have a discussion, and we look at the ratings, and we assess, unquote. If that's the case, if you're assessing those numbers, if I'm CBS, I would probably want MMA on a Saturday afternoon would seem to make more sense than to continue this on in prime time. At least not forcing the issue of Strikeforce, which is having big, big, huge cards every time out.
Well, the other thing is the numbers. I mean, this show was not a show that people wanted to watch, your average fan. I mean, it opened 2.57 million viewers. It then fell in the second quarter to 2.55. It peaked at 2.89 million and then fell at 10:30 to 2.52 million. I mean, this is usually you put fights on television and at the very least the rating grows throughout the show. That did not happen here. And again, we don't have the final numbers. We don't have the numbers from 11 to 11:45, the overrun, but it's not looking good. So,
but even if everything doubles, it's still, when it averages out, it doesn't really resonate.
No,
it won't matter.
It's not a good number, and actually we're gonna head to a break, but I've got more to talk about afterwards as far as how to promote MMA, because it seems a lot of people have no idea. We'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Ryan Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour and a half. Here on the Sports Byline Radio Network, Sirius Channel 122, talking about last night's Strikeforce on CBS show. Horrendous number for that program. Just a poor job of promotion on the part of Strikeforce.
Yeah, and it's hard to not like everybody involved in Strikeforce, from the announcing team to, Scott Coker's always done a good job, and the fighters and everything else, but when it comes to CBS and Showtime and how they promote these shows, and Strikeforce is at fault for this too, I mean, Showtime's got a lot of sporting events that come on, a lot of boxing and a lot of MMA, but they don't do a good enough job driving home, what the next show is going to be. I mean, when they signed Dan Henderson, they realistically should have gone, even though a lot of people know him, I mean, realistically, a lot of people don't know who the hell he is. I mean, yes, after Bisping, you probably could have gotten some more mileage out of him, but I never thought that the UFC losing Dan Henderson was going to help all that, hurt UFC all that much, or help Strikeforce. And they should have, as soon as they got him, said, here's our Randy Couture, here's our Captain America, our all-businessman, great wrestler who, dominated in Japan, and just gone through all of that, and they didn't do a good job at all. Really, I don't think they did anything at all, really driving that home to the general sports fan.
The show, to me, I like all of the people involved in Strikeforce. I've been to shows. They're all nice people, and I don't even think they're idiots. I think that largely they're very... Well, Scott Coker for sure is not an idiot. I mean, you
no
don't
way.
Promote as successfully as he has for so long and be an idiot. With that said, this CBS deal has just been, this show in particular, has just been a disaster. It was a disaster on paper. It was a disaster going in. I know some people are not going to want to hear that, but listen, you need to stop listening to people on internet message boards. You need to stop listening to the hardcore fans who are telling you what the world wants to see because they don't know. Gilbert Melendez and Shinya Aoki. Great idea if you're a hardcore fan. Horrendous idea for Strikeforce on CBS. You look at this show, this is prime time CBS, okay? This is not all your friends down at the local kickboxing academy or your local jiu-jitsu school. These are not those people. These are average human beings that may know a little bit about MMA, okay? These are the people that are going to tune in. They need to see something that is going to capture their interest, okay? None of these people, not a single one of these people, is going to know who Shinya Aoki is or is going to care that you've got the dream champion against the Strikeforce champion. In fact, I was sitting there, and they have Aoki and Gilbert in the ring, and Jimmy Lennon Jr. is, he announces Aoki as the dream champion. And there's no further mention made of what in the hell that means. What is your average person even thinking when they hear that? They have no idea what's going on. They don't know what dream is. They don't care at all. This is the dream champion versus the Strikeforce champion. You had on this show one thing. Dan Henderson. I thought Henderson was going to mean more than he did. But I think the larger issue was that you had Dan Henderson, which a lot of people knew, but he was facing Jake Shields. That is a match that I don't think anybody cares about going in. And obviously that was the case, that nobody cared about that fight going in. And, I mean, what does Jake Shields mean for Strikeforce? I mean, they couldn't get Gina, obviously. They couldn't get Fedor, okay? You could have tried to get a Herschel Walker fight. You could have tried harder to get a Bobby Lashley fight. You need to get a fight that people are going to tune in to watch. And then when you've got a whole bunch of people tuning in to see whatever your deal is, hopefully some of these other guys get over. Now, based on last night's show, you know, I don't think anybody would have gotten over. I mean, King Mo, he didn't get over. It was a 5-round fight. He showed guts. But there was really nothing there. They didn't show his ring entrance. The guy was not going to get over. Melendez, Aoki, there was a lot of butt scooting. It was a 5-round decision. Nobody was getting over there. And in Henderson and Shields, Shields dominated the positioning for 3 rounds. I guess went for a submission at the end of a couple of these here, but largely did absolutely nothing. And nobody got over in that fight. So not only did nobody watch, but even if people had watched, nobody was getting over. Okay, this should have been foresight being 2020, as Mike said. Where was the possibility of a gigantic knockout here? Where was the fantastic ring entrance? Where were the great video packages? I said this going in. I made this very clear going in. You've got 2 hours. You've got 2 hours. Number one, why are you booking 3 title fights? These title fights may mean something to your hardcore fans. They mean nothing to the general public. So number one, why are you booking 3 title fights in a 2-hour block? You know it's likely going to go over. That's number one. Number two, as noted, when you've got 3 title fights, let's say that it doesn't go over, okay? Even if you can squeeze 3 title fights into 2 hours, you're still squeezing. So what does that mean? That means you don't get to show King Mo's ring entrance. You don't get to show King Mo doing an interview. You don't get to see Dan Henderson video packages or doing a great interview. They're all very, very short because you've got to make up time. All of those non-fighting things, those are the things that get people over. Those are the things that you need on television. Those were the things that they cut out because they'd scheduled so much fight time on a show that they only had 2 hours to promote. So this was, all of this should have been seen going in, is what I'm saying. This is not stuff where, you know, it's over and you go, huh, you know, maybe we shouldn't have done 3 title fights in 2 hours. Huh, maybe we should have tried to show King Mo's entrance. Huh, maybe this Jake Shields main event wasn't the best idea. These things should have been obvious going in. That's what upsets me.
They also should have driven home the point, too, because they only showed a quick graphic for it, and they didn't get a chance to, but they didn't show any graphics during the fights. They did it for the other CBS shows, but why couldn't Strikeforce have tried to get in there at least at some point, or have the announcers say, May 15th, Overeem and Rogers? You know, Overeem, their heavyweight champion, you know, who's it? Isn't he their heavyweight champion technically?
He is. He has not fought in 3 years, or defended the title in 3 years.
You know, he's going to fight Brett Rogers, and, you know, okay, I want to see, well, I'm not saying anything, but I'd like to see Overeem pass tests. You know, and you have Orlovsky and Bigfoot Silva. You have two heavyweights coming. You didn't push that show. You didn't push the Challenger show. And then you said, well, you got the other show coming up in June on Showtime, which, you know, is going to be a, you know, a quote-unquote, like a Strikeforce level show. It was like when Nunes fought the Return of the King show in Hawaii, where the Diaz Nunes, you know, situation, it broke out in that one too. Push that as a big deal too, so the people that are watching, you know, may go and get Showtime and watch those too. I mean, drive that point home that you have other shows coming up.
Overall, it's, I guess we just wait and see. I would be really surprised to see another Strikeforce on CBS, and that's just very disappointing because it was a great thing that they had going in terms of exposure, and to see it all fall apart like this is very frustrating. I mean, obviously you can't go in there and, you know, you can't go in there and sign Overeem versus Aoki in like some sort of crazy Japanese style freak show or something like that. But I mean, there are things you can try and do. And
well, you can promote like the Japanese in the fact that it's a television show. And Scott Coker, they all know how to do that, and that's what the frustrating part of it is. And, you know, and they had that, you know, impression too, because when they did bring things up, they said, you know, fall, the return of Saturday Night Fights. You know, isn't Fedor going to be able to fight before then? What did you sign him for if it wasn't to be on CBS?
Well, the problem with the Fedor thing is nobody has any idea what's going on. I mean, it's...
Well, that's the thing.
They're back to, you know, is he coming back? Is he not? The, you know, the whole M1 thing is... I mean, it was a disaster going in. It's become a disaster. It's still a disaster. It's just... I don't know if Fedor's going to fight for Strikeforce again. And certainly if they don't have CBS anymore, I would be stunned, really, if he fought for them again. And, you know, what does that mean in terms of, does he go to UFC? Is this the end of Fedor as a major league performer in the U.S.? I don't know. It's there's a lot of questions here. And
another question is too. One of your most marketable guys in Nick Diaz and Gilbert Melendez, for that matter. Depending on what happens with Tennessee and if that, you know, commission ruling, if they decide something that gets taken by other commissions across the country, you have that playing into it too.
And I want to just throw one last thing in here before we head to the break. Gilbert Melendez last night, when he won, they go into the ring and it's time for his big post-fight interview. And they asked him, so now do you feel you're number one in the world? Now, first off, I don't like the rankings. I hate rankings, but they ask him, you know, are you number one in the world? And obviously, a lot of people had said that Shinya Aoki was number two and BJ Penn was number one. BJ lost last week. And, of course, Shinya Aoki got beaten by Melendez here. And does Melendez stand there in front of the whole world on CBS and proclaim, I'm number one! I am the number 155-pound fighter in the world! No. He goes, well, you know, I think I'm probably top three. Who
Maybe.
Coaches these guys? I mean, your
no
average,
one,
what is your
problem.
Average viewer thinking when you come out there and win? You've got the belt on your shoulder. You beat a guy that had a belt, and you're coming on here and going, I think I'm top three. They're thinking, well, who are the other two? That just...
Oh.
Go out there and tell the world you're number one, for God's sake. We've actually got to head to a break, Mike. I'll let you... you'll talk about this a little bit afterwards, and we'll get into some TNA as well. There's another thing that's going to brighten my day here. Just on a roll here with positive vibes here on this program. We'll talk about the TNA lockdown pay-per-view. We'll continue to follow this in case we get any more information on the ratings and that sort of thing. Not sure we'll get a lot more before the show goes off the air, but we shall see. So Anyway, we'll be right back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sirius Channel 122 and Sports Byline USA. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Trying to calm down here a little bit in terms of doing this program. I've been doing a lot of yelling. Been alerted that I'm going crazy today. Maybe I am a little bit. But we're going to try and switch gears to something that never drives me crazy. TNA. Total nonstop action. Yeah. Today's our lockdown pay-per-view, Mike. Are you excited for this one?
You know, I'm so excited. I did not watch TV last week, just honestly because I was thinking, do I really want to watch this? I really don't. Nothing against them, except I just don't want to watch it. And that'll make me just, I had the feeling that it was going to make me less happy to order the pay-per-view. Not that I'm ever happy to order a TNA pay-per-view, but I really thought if I watched the show last week, I wouldn't be ordering the pay-per-view at all. So I'm holding out a little bit of hope now for tonight just because I didn't watch this week.
Well, I didn't think the show was awful on Monday night. Wasn't the best Impact of all time, but I thought as a go-home show per TNA standards, it was not bad. When it was over, it was like, okay, well, at least I know what most of the matches are. That was a positive. Did I feel like, boy, I can't wait for this show? This show's going to be great? No, I really didn't. Was I excited to buy the show? No, I really wasn't. But I did know what most of the matches were. Although, I will say, this continues to annoy me. This is another Foresight 2020 deal. I realize that nobody is watching Impact nowadays. I realize that they're doing less than a 1 rating on Monday, and they're doing slightly less than that on Thursday. They're doing the Thursday replay again. So, in general, maybe they've got back that entire loyal audience that used to watch on Thursdays. Maybe they haven't. They certainly don't have all those people watching on Mondays right now. But let's just say that it was really doing a 1-5, which they thought it was going to do. When they went head-to-head on Monday nights on January 4th, TNA did a 1.4 from 8 to 10. And they thought they would be able to do a 1.5 regularly in the future. They're not, but let's just say they are. Shouldn't you, on at least one occasion, explain what Lethal Lockdown is? I mean, I watch that show every week, and they've never explained that it's War Games. Not a single time. I mean, the closest we've gotten is they've announced that on the show, there's going to be a James Storm, Rob Van Dam match where the winner gets the numbers advantage in Lethal Lockdown. I mean, that's literally the only way they've even hinted that this is a War Games match. How do you have a main event stipulation match and not even explain what it is? I mean, it's one thing if all of your viewers watch Lethal Lockdown every year, but for God's sake, how do you do this?
People know what the WWE structures are, yet every year those structures still get a Titantron and theme music and a video package to show to everyone. I don't understand it. My question about this week's show was going to be, just because they're going to have finally this AJ Styles, D'Angelo, De Niro title match, if anyone pinned AJ Styles clean in the middle of the ring to create another number one contender.
Yeah, that's the main event. In a cage, AJ and D'Angelo De Niro.
3 months coming of what should have been, what, a knee injury, the whole being sold the entire time, or the pulmonizing of the ankle that
yeah, it
just
is,
disappeared in the thin air.
It is interesting that they have had at least 2 months to build this up, because D'Angelo De Niro won his title shot 2 pay-per-views ago. And now here it is, the time has come, and does this feel like a world championship match at all? No. I can't even say I don't know why, because I do know why. Nothing ever feels like anything in TNA, because they don't understand how to get people over. But it should be at least a good match. I don't know if I'm expecting like a blow-away 4-plus-star match. I think it's going to be good. Hopefully it's good. I mean, everybody has speculated on the same finish, which is that somehow you do the double turn, the Pope goes with Ric Flair as the real new Nature Boy, and AJ Styles ends up going back to being a babyface. I don't expect it to happen, but I think that that would be kind of fun. But don't think it's happening. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I wonder if Desmond Wolfe is upset that he's lost the rights to Chelsea, to Ric Flair completely now.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with Chelsea. And by the way, we've got added news for this show. They've added a match, by the way. I guess it was added on over the weekend on the website or something like that. This was never mentioned on television. But it's going to be the Motor City Machine Guns versus Brian Kendrick and Homicide in a steel cage, which should be a good match. No build whatsoever to it, obviously, since it wasn't mentioned on TV. But at least they've added that. And another
I would have had a better idea for that, which would have been somebody coming out and saying, Matt Morgan, you're so tough. You're defending in the cage the titles against the Guns, and so they can get the tag titles off of him and be done with the goofiness they're doing there.
Well, you put more thought into that than I'm sure they did.
Of course.
And even more than I did, actually, because I didn't put any thought into it at all. Now, another match that is going to be changed, and I don't know exactly what they're going to do, the Plan 3-Way, Doug Williams, Kazarian, and Shannon Moore, that fight is off. As we mentioned at the top of the show, and which we'll talk about later, the WWE crew is stranded in Europe as a result of the volcano that erupted. There's ash everywhere. Airplanes, ash, don't go well together. So they're stuck, and guess who else is stuck? Doug Williams. Apparently he's unable to get to the U.S., and so he probably will not be on the pay-per-view tonight, or at least I'm told he won't be there. And I guess I don't know what that means. He's champion, so maybe Kazarian and Shannon Moore are going to have a singles match now. And, you know, I guess we'll see what happens.
You know, the way Doug Williams has been going recently, he would have been like 15 of the 30 bucks of my money that I would have paid into to see the show.
Yeah, he's great.
He's actually been really, really good.
He's been awesome lately. I love Doug Williams, and it's very sad news he's not going to be there, but at least it's something like he can't get out of the country and not the normal issues of people not getting the pay-per-views, which is something bad happens to them. Now, again, I know they've mentioned this aspect, but they haven't hammered this home enough either. And I used to do indie shows up in Canada for Tim Flowers. And once a year, he would do the all cage matches gimmick. And it seems like an overkill type of deal, like every single match is in a cage. But you know what? That was his biggest show of the year, every single year. The show where he brought in the cage and everybody's match was contested inside a steel cage. People like all cage match shows. The lockdown concept has been going on for years now. And when they first announced it years back, I thought, this is overkill. Why would you have every single match in a cage? But you know what? People love all cage match shows. So anyway, the point is, I know they've mentioned it, but they should have done a much better job hammering home the fact that, yes, every single match on this show is going to be in a cage. The championship match is in a cage. The Team 3D versus The Band, The Beautiful People versus Angelina Love and Tara, Angle and Anderson, all of these matches, every single match here is going to be in a cage. That's a big deal. And again, they didn't hammer it home nearly enough.
Well, it would also be a bigger deal if they had more things actually culminating to something like this. Where, you know, okay, Styles and De Niro, if it was promoted right over 2 months, that would have made sense. The War Games match itself, that would make sense. Even Kurt Angle and Anderson, if that was promoted better, it would make sense. But the rest of this, it's, you know, how long does it take these guys to put up a cage? Just have it for the last three matches. Still call it lockdown, but then don't do it for the other bunch of matches. This isn't like the old days, you know, at the fairgrounds where they had to put up the cage because they didn't have any time to do anything during the pay-per-view. You'd think they would have gotten this down by now where just either culminate everything and have a reason to have this, or just have it for a couple matches and keep the stinking name.
They are going to main event with lockdown, so the championship match is not going to be going on last. It is Team Hogan, and by the way, neither Hogan nor Flair are actually in the match. We've got Captain Abyss, Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Hardy, and Rob Van Dam facing Team Flair of Sting, who, by the way, I'll get to that in a minute. Sting, Beer Money, Robert Roode, James Storm, and Desmond Wolfe. So it's a four-on-four match. Sting thing is just so funny because it's like, and I guess they've turned him heel. He's a heel. I mean, he's with the heels and everything like that. But, man, you never see the guy. I mean, like on Monday on Impact, at the very beginning of the show, they did a deal where Jeff Jarrett went looking for Sting. He found him in the rafters. He beat him up. He beat him all the way down to the ring. And then the lights went out, and when they came back on, Sting had a bat. He beat up Jeff Jarrett, ended up with all the participants in the Lethal Lockdown coming down for a quick brawl. And then we never saw Sting again. Like in a single time on the show. We had interviews with all of Team Flair, no Sting. We had run-ins involving members of Team Flair, no Sting. He just completely disappeared. I have absolutely no idea why, but it was so funny in hindsight that I just had to bring it up here. He's the team captain, and he's never seen. I don't know. But this match, hopefully they do it right. They've done Lethal Lockdown in the past and messed it up. I mean, this is the easiest match in the world. The heels win the team advantage, the man advantage. So it's always 2-on-1 until a babyface comes in for a brief comeback. And then it's the numbers advantage again. I mean, this match is so easy. Yet they've done the deal where, for example, the babyfaces have the man advantage because, you know, it's never been done before. Which, for obvious reasons, it's never been done before. But, yes, they've messed it up in the past. Hopefully they don't mess it up here tonight. And I think it'll probably be a fun match. I think it'll be a fun match. I don't even know what the winner gets, to be honest with you. Like, what does the winning team get here?
The rights to a returning McFoley.
Wow!
I have no idea. I have no idea. And that's the thing. The match itself ought to be pretty awesome. It really should. It's just what the ending is going to be. And if it's just a setup to lead us into, you know, tomorrow night's Impact.
I mean, does the winner get a title shot?
Who knows? Maybe that's how they break. Maybe Robert Roode wins it. I wonder. Maybe somebody gets a new key. You get a new key, and you get to unlock yourself out of the lockdown cage and go into another cage.
That's right. Kurt Angle and Mr. Anderson is not only a cage match, but Mr. Anderson has the key to the cage. Because the only way to win is to escape. The only way to win this blow-off match is to run away from your opponent. And
Isn't it? I never understood that.
I just remember that every cage match I've ever seen with Escape the Cage rules involved you walking to the door and saying, "Hey, ref, open the door!" And he opened the door for you and you got out. Well, not in this match, apparently. There's a key, you see, and the key unlocks the door. So if Kurt Angle wants to run away from Mr. Anderson, he has to beat him up, get the key, unlock the door, and then flee. Yeah.
This match, if it would have meant something overall this time, instead of peaking all in, you know, the span of 3 weeks before they even had a match, would actually mean a lot more. Yeah, and it's just all of these, Kevin Nash and Eric Young.
Yeah.
The band and Team 3D, I mean, it just, the girls in the cage, just none of this, the whole rest of it is just, well, talk about the ultimate in filler, seemingly.
Well, let's finish running down all of the matches, and we'll give our predictions as far as winners, losers, and match quality. We'll start getting into that after the break. And then, of course, WWE news as well, guys stranded in Europe. Talk about all of that. A lot more coming up. Your phone calls and emails as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking about the TNA Lockdown pay-per-view here. As noted, yes, Kevin Nash and Eric Young are having a steel cage match, and there's some matches on the show that I think are going to be pretty good. James Storm and RVD, I think, is going to be pretty good. Machine Guns and Kendrick and Homicide should be really good. The Angle-Anderson match, wrestling-wise, should be solid. I think Lockdown is going to be a very good match, and I think AJ and D'Angelo De Niro is going to be good. But seriously now, Kevin Nash and Eric Young in a cage? Why would you put this match together? I mean,
I'm just hoping they added the guns against Kendrick and Homicide, because Storm Van Dam will probably be relatively quick because of wrestling later on, and I don't want to see the other matches go long at all. So maybe they're going to let them go a little bit longer, because none of these other matches I want to see past 2 minutes.
Could be. Again, Eric Young and Kevin Nash. Who puts this match together? Kevin Nash and Eric Young. It's guaranteed to be awful. It's guaranteed to have nobody care about it. Go ahead.
I mean, Scott Hall and Team 3D.
Well,
sure, that's... you know, yeah, Six Pack will be a Super Bowl, but still, I mean, you know.
Well, at least in that one.
Blood flow.
Yeah, I was going to say, in that one, at least you are in a cage, because you hit each other with some stuff, you run each other into the cage, there's blood, you know what I mean? At least you can do some smoke and mirrors in that one. What smoke and mirrors? I mean, even blood can't save Kevin Nash and Eric Young in that match. That one, if that goes more than 3 minutes, these people have lost their minds. Which, hey, I guess we'll see, but that is just a scary match. Got a couple of others here to talk about as well, including the women's match, Madison Rayne and Velvet Sky versus Angelina Love and Tara. Very complicated stips. We'll get into that after the break and start taking your phone calls and emails as well. We still got another hour here on the show. Top of the hour news coming up. We'll be back afterwards with more content, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined today, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. We've been spending an hour talking Strike Force on CBS, the horrendous rating that show did. But talking the TNA Lockdown pay-per-view as well. We got some WWE news, the status of the Raw and SmackDown crew. Who is going to be in America for TV tomorrow, and who is not? What is the latest? We'll talk about that. Take your phone calls and emails as well over the course of the next hour. Mike, we were talking the Lockdown pay-per-view. The women are having a match, and it's rather convoluted. It's Madison Rayne and Velvet Sky against Angelina Love and Tara. And to clarify for those that have no idea what's going on, and hopefully I get this right, Madison and Velvet are the tag team champions. They're facing Angelina and Tara. Angelina is the women's champion. If Angelina or Tara get a pinfall, they win the tag titles. And if Madison or Velvet beat Angelina or Tara, the person that does so becomes the women's champion. Have I gotten that right?
I think so.
What a convoluted... Why can't people just keep things simple? Is this stipulation selling a single pay-per-view buy? No!
Maybe the deal, I guess, that there's so many ways to go with this that you wouldn't care about. Going to be beautiful people all getting back together. Angelina Love winning, but Tara turns on her because she wants her belt back instead of her spider that she won in the box, and yeah.
And by the way, that fight will also be inside a steel cage.
All Japan women just were turning over in their graves right now at the thought of this.
Remember when they did the deal where not only was every match in a cage a couple of years ago, but it also had a stip? Like there was a brass knuckles on a pole match inside a steel cage. Those were the good old days of TNA, everybody.
Well, Vince Russo says you can never get enough of these things. You have to hook the viewer with things like that.
Yeah,
because
but...
it's worked so well for UFC to have Brock Lesnar and Shane Carwin. They're going to announce that not only is it for the UFC heavyweight title, it's also going to have Mama Bagwell in a forklift.
That's right. Mrs. Lesnar, Sable on a pole match.
Dana White on a pole match.
That's right. The winner is going to get, I don't know. We're going to head to a break. We've done enough fantasy booking here, if you even want to call it that. When we come back, phone calls and emails. We've got a million email questions. A lot of stuff to talk about today. That's coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts for the next hour and a half. I'm sorry, the next hour. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, and we're going to be taking phone calls and emails in this segment, so let's not waste any time. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Lance in Dallas.
Lance, what's going on?
Hey, I wanted to tell you a story about Gene Kaninsky down here in Dallas. I noticed, you know, Kelly, his son, was here for about over a year. He was at the 85 and 86 Cotton Bowl shows. The 86 was the one with the hair tag team match with Kerry and Kevin versus Gino and Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that second one that Kelly, who was just, you know, he was barely above job status here in Dallas the whole year. And but Gene came to the ring with him at that Cotton Bowl show. And after Kelly, he pinned a guy named Tommy Montana, a regular jobber around here. But Gene got on the mic and started calling out Fritz and motioning to the back, you know, come on out here and let's get this on, and things like that. And, never had Kelly been linked to the Von Erichs here as far as a feud or anything like that. And just it was almost like Gene went into business for himself. It was very, very strange. And it was just a weird story at the time, and I felt that, you know, I was pretty young, not smart at all about the business, and it just seemed strange that he was doing this, and nothing was ever alluded to again. But I really enjoy the show, and thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. I'm actually very glad that you called to talk about that, because we spent so much time ranting and raving about, well, realistically, in the case of lockdown, stuff that doesn't matter, that we didn't even talk about the death of Gene Kaninsky, former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, beat Lou Thesz for the belt, in fact, and I believe dropped the title afterwards to Dory Funk Jr. This was, I believe he won it in 1968, dropped it in the early 70s, and Gene Kaninsky, a tough guy, and he'd been battling cancer for a while. And he was, as everybody, I mean, he was determined to beat it, and he was very upset. He was one of those guys that, I mean, even till the very end, I mean, if anything, he was angry to be going, because he had talked about what a fun life he'd led. He'd love to do it over again. He loved being a pro wrestler. Didn't follow it so much nowadays, but he loved being a wrestler at the time, and everything that went along with that, and it's very sad to see him go.
Yeah, he went on for a long, long time, too. I mean, he always kept himself in great shape, and that's, you know, the tragedy of this is he was still, I guess, in pretty good shape, but, you know, with cancer eating you away. But it's just sad that this year, two guys, they kind of did things that their own way, and when they were ready to drop the titles, they said, here you go, and didn't look back from it. The Kaninsky and Jack Briscoe both passed this year because just such incredible ties to the past of what wrestling was.
Yeah, Gene actually lived around here. It was a little farther up north and everything like that. But, he retired here, and he'd done promoting up in Vancouver and did the old All-Star Wrestling. And, I mean, there are in some ways, I mean, I never met him. But he promoted All-Star Wrestling, and then eventually Al Tomko took over All-Star Wrestling, and my friend Buddy Wayne worked for All-Star, and then Buddy Wayne ended up training me, so I guess in some ways there's kind of a link all the way back to Gene from myself. But yeah, he was a promoter, he was a wrestler, he pretty much did it all, and as noted, he was tough enough. I'm gonna tell you how tough he was. He was tough in the sense that Lou Thesz, when he was ready to drop the title, he had to find a successor. And Lou was very specific about who he dropped the belt to. And Gene Kaninsky had, I mean, he was an amateur wrestler, but it wasn't like he was an NCAA champion or anything like that. I mean, he had a background as a shooter. But when you list great shooters who have gone into pro wrestling and that sort of thing, great amateurs, I mean, most people aren't going to put Gene Kaninsky on that list. But he was such a tough guy that Lou Thesz saw him as a guy he could drop the belt to, and if there was trouble in the ring, and granted this was, you know, the late 1960s, so it wasn't like you were going to have a lot of double cross or anything like that, but he saw Gene Kaninsky as a guy tough enough that he could take care of himself. And that was a big deal. And as noted, you know, when he had traveled the world and defended the title and it was time to give it up, I mean, he went in there and, I mean, he gave it up in the sense that he cut a promo on the NWA folks. He told them that they were pimps. They were using the wrestlers as whores. He told them to F off and this and that. And, you know, he gave up the title. That was the end of that. And obviously he was still a huge draw. And he still worked for him because he still made a lot of money and made a lot of money for them. But that was the end of his NWA title reign. He told them off. So a man's man, Gene Kaniski.
Yeah, really. And with all the hookers and shooters that are always talked about, Billy Robinson, and for good reason, and the Briscoes and Fez and guys like that, you know, two of the toughest guys in the last, what, 50 years, you know, were just, they weren't wrestlers by trade. You know, I think Gene Kaniski was a football player, and Harley Race was just a tough son of a bitch. And those are the guys who may have been the most feared.
Let's jump into the mailbag here. We've got a lot of questions. We'll take some phone calls as well. This person wants to know the ratings for ROH on HDNet. We answered this question before. HDNet does not subscribe to a rating service. They don't get ratings, so there are no numbers for ROH on HDNet, and we don't know how many people watched that show. Could be a lot, could be a little. I don't know what the HDNet, I mean, it's probably not a significant amount of people, but it's kind of impossible to say. And all that matters is that HDNet is happy with ROH, and so I don't see them going anywhere anytime soon.
And the thing is also, if you have HDNet, ROH is a good TV show.
Yeah.
It's a good hour-long TV show, so if you're lucky enough to have HDNet, it is worth having.
I've been watching it every week. I've been doing reviews in the newsletter, and it's fun times, so make sure you check it out. In fact, I've got the new show that'll be airing tomorrow that I've got to watch here later on today, so I'll be checking that one out. This person wants to know, any early word on the WrestleMania buy rate? No. May 5th is the date that it's going to be out, and based on different sort of trending patterns, I would expect right around 1 million buys, which actually it's pretty amazing that show's doing 1 million buys, and UFC with St. Pierre probably did right around that as well. So a big weekend for pay-per-view.
Yeah, and I still think it's actually going to be under, but because of the cost of it, you know, it's still going to be so incredibly profitable, it doesn't matter. I know 1 million was the number everybody really, really wanted. But I just don't think it's going to hit that. But it doesn't matter because of the dollar amount it brings in.
Well, also, you've got international numbers added in. I mean, the domestic number may be down. It may be down from previous shows. But the international has picked up so much that it still could conceivably do one of the better WrestleMania buy rates of all time.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is going to do that.
This person here says, oh, it's just a note. Yoshitatsu is on his way to New Jersey. The Raw crew is still stuck in Europe. SmackDown crew returns to New Jersey tonight. That is basically the update. We've been promising to talk about this for a while. Iceland, volcano, giant eruption. The winds were blowing the ash towards the European mainland. And so air traffic shut down. The Raw and SmackDown crews were both doing a tour of Europe. And as noted, what it's looking like right now is that the SmackDown crew should be back this evening. The Raw crew still stranded. And they're not going to be back in time for Raw tomorrow. So basically, Raw is going to tape, but it's probably going to be a largely SmackDown crew. And I think they're going to be trying to find a studio in Europe and get a lot of the Raw guys in there to basically talk about, my God, look what's happened. And they'll air a lot of that footage on the Raw show. So it's going to be one of those kind of, I don't want to say once-in-a-lifetime deals, but one of those Raws that I always find interesting because it's they are forced out of the regular script. They're forced to do some real-life stuff like this. And it always makes for a far more interesting show. And I guess with the and it's also interesting because the SmackDown crew, I mean, you're going to have to do a Raw go-home show without a lot of the Raw guys. So that's going to be very interesting. And Mike, we'll get your thoughts on that after the break. And we'll take more phone calls and emails as well. Here for another 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sirius Radio Channel 122, and Sports Byline USA. We'll be right back. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've been talking about the Raw and SmackDown crews stranded. Actually, just the Raw crew at this point stranded in Europe, and the SmackDown crew on the way back. They're going to be doing Raw tomorrow night. And I always like these shows, Mike, as I said. I feel really bad for the Raw guys being stranded out there. I mean, this is a complete disaster. A natural disaster, in fact. An act of God, I guess it's being called. And it does make for interesting shows with the presumed cut-ins to studio shots of the guys talking about their travel woes. I always kind of like shows like that.
See, if you know, obviously it's you can't do these sorts of things, but it would be nice if they actually just threw it back and did a 1985 style, like Georgia Championship Wrestling show or something like that. That would actually be hilarious. But looks like they may get out of there a little bit, you know, hopefully sooner too, as the European air industry is apparently, you know, test flights have gone through. They say it's not really that bad. So they're really pushing to get that ban out of the way as fast as humanly possible, although I'm sure they're doing it for purely monetary reasons. But yeah, it's just, you know, when you don't, wrestling sometimes is just so incredibly simple to where you don't overthink it, you don't overbook it, you don't overdo it. You know, it'll be fine. You know, it's fine. And guys talking, you know, maybe it's better this way with having, you know, the Raw show coming up and most guys having to just talk about it instead of having that, you know, sort of interaction. I don't think it's all that bad of an idea. And again, it just, you know, shows are scripted. That's the way it's got to be. It's a TV show now. But sometimes shows like this are good to level everything back down again. Just throw them out there and see what they can do.
I'm not a pilot, but the idea of being the guy that has to do the test flight through the ash, I don't know. Not my thing.
They're saying no obvious damage after flying through the ash. I don't know about the less obvious damage, but at least no obvious damage.
That's right. There may be massive amounts of minor damage as you're about to fly over the Atlantic Ocean. All right, this person here says, WWE seems to be pushing a lot of new heels, Sheamus, Swagger, McIntyre, but not a lot of new babyface stars. Seem to be a lot of heels in WWE, not enough faces. After the draft, who do you see them pushing as new face stars or any heels who could be turned face to even out the roster? God, I'd have to look at the entire roster. The draft is coming up in a little over a week, and it's going to be the big show as they shuffle up all of the rosters. And I guess, I don't know, next week will be a better show to talk about the draft, since it'll be the day before, and we'll get a better idea, probably based on TV, of who's going to be going where. I would guess, based on the fact that they're doing Chris Jericho and Edge in a cage coming up at the next pay-per-view, I would guess that means that they're going to be splitting those two up, one to each brand, and that's why they're blowing off the feud. But maybe a lot of different ideas like that, I guess we shall see, but draft theoretically can mix things up in a good way, but then again, at the same time, sometimes the draft kind of ends up being a bust, and nothing really changes either way. Let's go back to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this, and where are you calling from? You are on the air.
Hello, Brian.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, this is Alex Goff. Hey, I would just like a comment about last night's Strikeforce show. Is that I guess overall the fight and I guess the low ratings, I think, going to be the story. But, man, King Mo put on an awesome performance. I mean, Musashi was clearly better, and Mo just fought and fought. And eventually when Musashi got tired, King Mo just kept fighting, and he won it. I was just impressed.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, I thought that King Mo showed a lot of heart. Because, I mean, obviously, as you noted, what happened was he went in the underdog. Everybody thought that Musashi was going to beat him. And Musashi's plan going in was to wear him down, and King Mo would get tired, and then he would beat him in the later rounds. And it's a great plan if Musashi hadn't gotten tired. He did, right around the same time, in fact. And unfortunately, at that point, for Musashi, he was facing a wrestler who's been in the trenches. He's had to fight through exhaustion many, many times in his career. And he went out there and fought through the exhaustion. And Musashi did not. And he ended up, King Mo got the win. And I watched it and I thought, God, you know, this guy's gutting this out and way to go. But I just don't know that your average CBS fan would have seen it the same way. I just think that most of your casual viewers would have probably just seen it as kind of a boring fight.
Yeah, I think the same thing, too, for as far as the average fan goes. And what it also showed was another thing, too, of Europeans and amateur wrestling. They're always going to have a problem with it until it starts becoming, you know, just more ingrained in them that amateur wrestling is something they need to come up with, you know, come up on, too.
Well, I mean, not just amateur wrestlers, but we saw the same thing in the Aoki fight. I mean, it's a deal in Japan where guys, I mean, there's not the weight cutting that you see in America. The guys, and especially if you watched a lot of Pride, I mean, Kazushi Sakuraba made his career fighting much, much larger guys and beating them. And unfortunately, you can't do that nowadays. And Aoki went in there and, God, the poor guy looked like he should have been fighting, you know, Miguel Torres. He looked like he should be fighting in the 135-pound division. He's in there with Gilbert and, you know, Gilbert.
He's not a big guy. Gilbert's not a big guy.
No, but he looked gigantic in there next to this poor guy.
And then the fight at the end, wow, that makes Strike. I mean, I like Strikeforce, and really more so than TNA, because TNA is terrible. But, I mean, I want Strikeforce to do well because I want UFC to have some competition. But goodness, does that come off as low rent. I mean, everyone fighting Mayhem Miller at the end, you know? I mean, that was terrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, the funny thing was I had a bunch of people over here watching the show, and God, did they hate this show. I mean, they were really hating this show, and they were all standing up to leave and going, man, that was lame. And suddenly the brawl occurred, and boy, did they sit back down fast. The brawl saved the show for these people. Now, you know, the problem we've talked about before is you know, you've got this brawl, bad show to have this brawl on, essentially. But that was a thing that really got them back into it and seeing it as more than just a boring MMA show. Unfortunately, it's probably nothing's going to come of it because I don't expect Strikeforce to remain on CBS.
Well, thanks for all your hard work, Brian. Member for life. Have a great day.
All right, thanks very much. Really appreciate the call. Go ahead, Mike.
No, thank you. If Lesnar and Carlin would have had a fight after UFC 111, you know, it right in New York, right underneath when you're trying to get in New York City, right under their noses, it wouldn't have been, you know, a good idea to do it. Same thing here, especially because the card being so weak. So you have the critics that look at this as, you know, who don't take it seriously. It's just a put-on thing to try to save the show. And then the flip side being it's just to the level that it got to, it ended up being embarrassing instead of more like that Diaz Nunes situation on the Showtime card, which was, you know, far more entertaining.
Let's see, we've got here in the mailbag. Quick question. Oh, Jim Cornette. I should probably talk about this. For those that I shouldn't laugh. Well, I should laugh because it's so absurd. But Jim Cornette sent an email to Terry Taylor, and he was just basically telling Terry that, you know, I say a lot of bad things about TNA. I write a lot of bad things. I just want you to know, Terry, you're my friend. Don't take it personally. I like you. I like all the guys in TNA. I just hate Vince Russo. And he basically wrote that if he could find a way to murder Vince Russo and not go to prison, he would do it. Now, this is one of those things where if you explain this to your average person on the street, they think, my God, what a crazy madman. And, I mean, to be fair, in some ways, Jim Cornette is a crazy madman. But, you know, Jim Cornette's not going to kill Vince Russo. I mean, anybody who knows Jim Cornette has known him for any length of time. Jim Cornette is a guy that flips out and says and writes crazy things. He does not do crazy things. I mean, he swung a baseball bat once and destroyed a car and that sort of thing. But Jim Cornette is not plotting ways to kill Vince Russo. But regardless, he wrote this, and attorneys contacted Jim Cornette about making terroristic threats, and Jim Cornette put everything up on the internet and this and that. And anyway, it's been quite the deal. And this person says, is there any chance this could be a negative impact on the TNA ROH relationship since Cornette works for ROH? While TNA talent appearances in ROH are few and far between, those appearances come off as a big deal and a significant draw. I mean, the ROH side has said nothing. I expect them to say nothing. I don't picture them, you know, I don't picture the TNA ROH relationship falling apart because of this. And part of that is because TNA is making money from ROH using their guys. And believe me, they need to make all the money they can. And I don't see it becoming maybe it will, but I don't see it becoming a big deal. And quite frankly, I would be surprised if it did. What are your thoughts on the whole Jim Cornette deal?
I don't mean to downplay it or anything like that, but yeah, I mean, yeah, okay, I guess you can bring up that he smacked around Santino Marella, you know, that was, and you can add that into Jim Cornette, but no, I don't think that Jim Cornette is, I guess it's the definition of terroristic threats, you know, it was a dumb email to send. But then again, do I honestly think Jim Cornette would kill anyone? No, I do not. So I think it's just kind of ridiculous. And, well, I don't know if I'm Vince Russo, if it's ridiculous or not, but I don't think anything is, you know, going to come from this further, especially not any type of problems with ROH or TNA working together on anything.
I know it's I've read a lot of stuff on it, and it's a controversial thing in the sense that you've got, I think it basically boils down to whether you're a Jim Cornette fan or not, because it seems to me that the people that are really saying that this is a big deal and that Jim Cornette is whatever. I mean, these are obviously people that are not fans of Jim Cornette. I think whether you're a fan or not, you should be able to look at this realistically and see it for what it actually is, which is not a terroristic threat. But
it's like people getting too excited about Frank Mir saying what he said. I mean, yes, it was bad form, bad timing. You know, Frank Mir is not going to murder Brock Lesnar. Just, you know.
We got to head to a break. We'll talk about this more when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, TV reports. Going to have the ongoing running play-by-play of the TNA Lockdown pay-per-view starting immediately after this show. When this show goes off the air, go to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer will be doing running play-by-play of the show. If you don't buy the pay-per-view and you want to know what happens, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. And if you love this radio show, if you love this show and you only get a chance to hear it once per week, and say you've got a commute, you've got trips to the gym, you want more audio covering pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, WrestlingObserver.com provides it all. You can head to the website, scroll down on the right-hand side of the page, a list of our latest 3 free radio shows. Download them, sample them. It's about 3 hours of content right there. And if you love what you hear, consider signing up. We do daily radio shows. Dave Meltzer and I were up last night for an hour talking Strikeforce and the WWE issues with air travel. Tonight we'll be up covering the Lockdown pay-per-view. Tomorrow night we'll be up covering the Raw and Impact shows. Basically, at least one show a day. And Mike here does a program as well, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Between all of our various radio show hosts, we do approximately 15 to 20 radio shows per week. So if you love pro wrestling and mixed martial arts and you love listening to the audio, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Sign up and get all of the audio content. Download it to your iPod, your iPhone, wherever you listen to your audio, and never be without something to listen to. Plus, of course, the newsletters as well. Wrestling Observer newsletter is now online. Dave's been publishing it since 1983. Figure Four Weekly, published since 1995. Not only do you get all the new stuff, but we've got all the audio archives and newsletter archives as well. Thousands and thousands and thousands of radio shows available for download. Interviewing some of the biggest names in the history of the business. All up there at WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out. And Mike, we were talking about terroristic threats by Jim Cornette. And you were talking about Frank Mir and Brock Lesnar. And you had something to add to that.
Well, it's actually just kind of transition away from that of real violence here. Tragic news out of Venezuela, where WBC lightweight champion Edwin Valero has been arrested on suspicion of killing his wife. Says here from ESPN, federal police chief Wilmer Flores says Valero is being held after police found the body of his wife, Jennifer Carolina
Vieira in a hotel in the city of Valencia. Flores says Valero left the room around dawn on Sunday and told the hotel security personnel that he had killed his wife. Now, Valero has had just recently checked in to anger management and to drug and alcohol rehabilitation after he had allegedly beat his wife, to which he has claimed that the police officer was the one who actually pressured his wife into telling authorities that that had happened. But sad situation. Yeah, it's going to be one that people are going to be looking at, too, because of Valero obviously being a boxer and the drug and alcohol issues. After his 11th fight, he was in a motorcycle accident and fractured his skull. And there was no one that would actually clear him to fight after that. He said he was fine, and he went on this incredibly dominant streak. He began his first 18 fights with 18 straight first-round knockouts. He's undefeated right now, and he was signed on with Top Rank, and Top Rank helped to get him and his Japanese promoters, which is who he had to sign with because no one wanted to touch him at the time, Tekken Promotions. They were able to get him licensed in 2008 into Texas. And he's the WBC lightweight champion, and Top Rank had really wanted to angle at one time and I think still had eyes on the possibility of Valero, who is still undefeated right now, still, I believe, all of his wins by knockout, against the possibility of Manny Pacquiao. So this is it's a situation that won't be as big as the Chris Benoit case here, but I think it's going to be one of those things that, you know, as people look at Brains and Outside the Lines and HBO-style shows are probably going to pick up on it. A very tragic story.
Back to the emails. This person says, I want to say keep up the good work. He says, my question is, does TNA release their pay-per-view buys for each year? I've been trying to find their buys for 2005. Compare them to the ones last year. I can't find them anywhere. Other question, the most purchased pay-per-view of all time. Some have said Lockdown 2008. I thought another pay-per-view had more. If Lockdown 08 was the most, what is the second most? They do not release buy rates. You've pretty much got to talk to people off the record in TNA to get the numbers. In general, the 2005 numbers were just slightly better than last year's numbers, which, think about that, by the way. Not like any of them were doing phenomenal or anything like that, but they should not have been doing better in 2005 than they were doing with national primetime television on Spike TV in 2008. But the two most purchased pay-per-views are the Lockdown pay-per-view with Angle versus Joe and the first Angle versus Joe pay-per-view after Angle jumped ship from WWE, both of which did about 60,000 buys, I recall. And those are the two top numbers. So anyway, that's about the best sort of information you're going to get about that. This person says, with the lack of success seen with TNA's move to Monday night, seemingly a loss of fan base, when do you think TNA will finally do something about Russo and their Hogan-Bischoff strategy? Or do you think they will just stick with Russo until they are out of business or tired of not doing well and fold the company? Well, you'd think at some point they'd get rid of Russo. He's actually talked of phasing himself out, which is a face-saving way of not getting axed. And it's funny, everybody's like, who replaces Russo? And my answer is always, the guy that throws out the garbage. Anybody! But I think the issue they're having is that Vince Russo writes these insanely complex scripts, and nobody wants to write the scripts, and so finding a guy to write the script has been difficult. My suggestion is, you don't need a damn script. Just book a wrestling show and have guys go out and do promos when they need to talk. This is not difficult, but that's the issue they seem to be having, is who can replace Vince Russo? What an issue to have!
And you think it would be pretty easy. I mean, just if there's one guy, you know, writing the show, there's got to be one other person out there somewhere, isn't there? There has to be. That's what I don't understand, and it just it makes absolutely no sense. This is obviously not working. I don't know how long you want to give it. And he himself says he's getting burned out. Replace him with someone, anyone. It doesn't matter. Except if it's Jim Cornette. Don't do that now. I don't think it would be a good idea.
Oops, let's, this person here says, what do you think is the bigger threat to TNA survival, Vince Russo or Dixie Carter? That's a loaded question right there. Probably Dixie Carter, since she hired Vince Russo. And, it's, I don't know. She's the owner, she's got to be the biggest threat. Go ahead.
I was saying, in a way it's Dixie because obviously she protects the guys and she's very loyal to the people she has, but you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, if she just gets rid of him and gets somebody else in who actually knows what they're doing, you know, I mean, it's just, you can't have one thing without the other in this scenario.
Not confident in her finding people that know what they're doing based on her track record. Let's go back to the phones. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from? You are on the air. You are off the air. All right, let's go back to the questions here. With the volcano situation affecting the Raw roster going back from Europe in time for the TV taping, is Vince McMahon likely to treat Europe worse than he treats Canada? It's clearly nobody's fault, but then again, this is Vince. That's a good question. Yeah, he may... Well, we may see a skit involving volcanoes, actually, on the show. Maybe someone will be thrown into one. Or something like
that. He'll just blame Iceland. I mean, Iceland's the one who's doing all this. It's not even affecting their airspace.
That's
right. So he just won't run any shows in Reykjavik.
That's true. All right, back to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from? You are on the air. Going once. Probably the same guy repeatedly calling back to see if he can attempt to ruin the show. This person says, would Paul Heyman really be that big of an asset to TNA if he chose to sign with them? It's impossible to say, but I cannot fathom Paul Heyman doing a worse job than Vince Russo. That would be impossible.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Would it be an upgrade? Yes.
A giant
even if
upgrade.
He could just call in from wherever he's at right now and just call in, all right, do this, and it would be better.
This person says, what do you guys think the main event of SummerSlam will be this year?
Now, that's way too far off to think about here.
Why do I just automatically think Batista versus John Cena?
Depending on what they do, I guess it wouldn't be Edge Orton, but, I mean, any mixture of, you know, four or five guys, you know, just take your pick of how it's going to mix up.
Has there been, like, a major Edge versus Orton match?
I'm trying to think, after they split up, was there one? The Team RKO.
That's right. That's actually a match that seems like it would actually be fresh after all these years. I think because both guys have been heel for so long, and unfortunately now they've both turned babyface. So the Randy Orton turn, though, I think has been very much a failure. So maybe turn him back heel, draft Edge, and do the Orton versus Edge feud.
Oh, yeah, or vice versa. Same way where, you know, if he goes and beats Swagger, then you just have him drafted over the next day to SmackDown, too, which is, you know, within the realm of possibility as well. So, no, I mean, that actually would be something I wouldn't have any problem with that whatsoever if that was the main event, but it's just too early to tell yet.
WWE's got a pay-per-view next weekend, and actually off the top of my head until I look it up, I have no idea what's on that show. What's on that show next week?
I know it's in Baltimore, and it's Orton and it's Orton and Swagger for the title.
That's right. It's Orton Swagger for the title, and then it's Jericho Edge in a cage.
In a cage.
That's right. And what else?
Punk Mysterio.
That's right. Punk Mysterio, where if Punk loses, he has to shave his head. And what do you make of that match, by the way? I'm expecting a head shaving, to be honest with you.
I hope that there's something where they turn it around, and this, again, here goes fantasy booking, but, you know, as good as Dominic was standing there and the daughter was, have Punk lose the match, still they beat up Dominic somehow, shave his head, which leads to mask versus hair, which I think to draw this out, I think would be make a lot more sense. Again, this is one of those times, and they did this with Jericho and Ray. And they're doing it now with this. I just don't think they're plotting it out in the right way. I'd like to continue to see this, and I think most people watching do too, and it makes, you know, Mysterio, it's hard for him to be, you know, him in a super underdog role, you know, getting smacked around by CM Punk and his unit, I think is good, and I still think the need to continue to go out and shave heads on TV every week too before leading to what would be the penultimate match.
Let's try to jump into the phones one more time. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from? This poor guy just doesn't want to be on the air. The Ray-Punk match is interesting in the sense that Ray beat him. You know, he beat him at the pay-per-view. And now they're doing this rematch where Rey Mysterio has nothing on the line. You know what I mean? Rey Mysterio is the babyface, but CM Punk has offered to put his hair on the line for this match. There's nothing at stake for Rey. If he loses, all he gets is an L in the win-loss column.
Yes, and I think it's a 10-ultimate before. I meant ultimate. But yeah, I mean, that's why I would hope that there's going to be some sort of wackiness happening here, because it would kind of end with just a little bit of a thud from all the good stuff that they've been doing now, you know, pre-WrestleMania and everything else. And, you know, I thought the excuse behind the WrestleMania match being so damn short, even though it was good, was to just continue this thing cranking on. I mean, there would be a match for SummerSlam, and the fact that I fully believe that these two sides could actually continue this thing out with entertaining TV all the way up till SummerSlam. They won't, but it could be believable that you could do that with this, and I think they should get more out of it than they are right now.
We're going to head to a break. We'll be right back to wrap up the show. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. In all of today's show, with all the news, we've neglected to mention the big story of the week, which is that SmackDown is moving to the Sci-Fi Network. And in the fallout, we may see not only the death of my network TV, but we'll probably never have to hear Wild and Young again. NXT canceled.
Thank you, God, Jesus, and Mr. McMahon. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, God, with all the good music that they use in video packages and everything else. NXT, which I thought was not my cup of tea to begin with, I think it's just been a flawed concept. Just on top of it, the icing on the cake, having that extremely crappy, painful song that I know you love so much, the fact that will go bye-bye will not make me sad at all.
They are shopping around to Bravo and WGN. The show may get picked up. If not, it's canceled. But one way or the other,
they have got to change that format if they do. If they sell this thing off to a Bravo or something like that, they've got to change what it was.
Yeah, I thought that they really had something in NXT, and then there's potential there, and they've squandered it. But the big move is coming later on this fall, September, October. My network TV, I don't know, its future is not looking good. But SmackDown will at least have a home for the next couple of years as WWE works to put together their WWE TV network. And NXT, I guess we'll finish off this season and maybe have one more season, and then that will be the end of that. So we'll see what happens in the future, but big move, My Network TV 2 Sci-Fi for SmackDown, and that show will continue inexplicably on Friday nights. And that is it for this week's show, everybody. I want to thank everybody for listening. You can always head to WrestlingObserver.com for more. In fact, if you head over there right now, Dave Meltzer doing ongoing live play-by-play of the TNA Lockdown pay-per-view. We'll talk about that show next week. We'll talk about the WWE pay-per-view, which will be next Sunday as well. We'll do a full preview of the show on next week's program, and it should be a fun time. So thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.